Welcome to the Retro Video Store Podcast.
Welcome, everyone, to the Retro Video Store Podcast. I'm your host, Eric.
Hi, Eric.
And that's my co-host, Neil.
I'm Neil, and who is back with us for a two-podcast streak?
Pancakes!
That would be David. Two shows in a row. That's amazing.
I'm here. And I'm happy to talk about this one.
That's good. That's good. It was a little tough to talk about Jason Goes to Hell. That was a little bit of a slog.
That was a rough one to get through. That was a little bit challenging.
You could hear it in our voices. We're just kind of like, and this happened, I think.
That was what my house was like watching this. My wife literally looked over at me and she goes, if you don't tell Eric to watch some better fucking movies.
I like this one. I hadn't seen it in probably a good decade. And I just watched it a couple of weeks ago when I was sick with COVID, and it cracked me up. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember what a big movie this was when it first came out. So maybe we should do it. But
it was successful because there were people in it that I wanted to see dead.
And that's, so, I think that was the point.
Yeah.
But before we start talking about Cabin Fever from 2002, let's do what we always do. Let's start with David this week. David, what did you watch this week?
Eric, I feel honored about this. So I went into a true crime thing, and I watched the O.J. Simpson thing, the 5-episode thing on O.J. Simpson. Really good.
Was it O.J. Simpson Made in America?
Yeah, the 30 for 30.
Oh, that's so good. It's one of the best true crime documentaries I've ever seen. Really, really good.
Yep. I crammed that down in 2 days. Yeah, it was so good. And then I watched Listen, the story about Lauren McCluskey and the murder at the University of Utah and how University of Utah messed that one up. And then, and then I watched the one about the MH370 flight, Malaysia flight that disappeared. So wow. I was in it. That's what I watched this week. All good. I recommend all three of those documentaries. Really good.
You're binging the true crime stuff.
That's right. Neil, what did you watch?
Oh, you know what? I'm going to go straight to Eric because he gets a little butt hurt. If we don't get straight onto that, or he gets skipped. No.
Let's talk about Neil.
I want to hear what Eric watched. Eric, did you watch?
I always preferred.
I want to know what you watched.
Well, if you insist.
I insist. The making of documentary, the...
I watched Twin Peaks, Fire Walk With Me, just because I was really bored and I couldn't find anything. It's one of those things where it's the problem where you have so many streaming services that you can't make a decision. So I ended up on HBO Max and I was looking, I'm like, well, I haven't seen Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me in a long, long time. So I watched the first part of it one night and then watched the second part of it yesterday. And that movie is nuts. I really, really like it. It is, I have to look what year that came out, but it was like Eli Roth's torture porn before there was such a thing, because it's a bleak movie and Laura Palmer goes through hell in that movie. But it also set me off on a kind of David Lynch tangent. So I watched this documentary called The Art Life, and it's about David Lynch and his paintings and photography. And it barely touches on his movies. It only touches a little bit on Eraserhead, but then it stops. And he has the coolest life ever. Sit around, smoking cigarettes, drinking Coca-Cola, maybe having some coffee, painting, and having like a wife that's like 30 years younger than you. And just, you know, just living that life where all you do is create, because you've established yourself that much that nobody cares what you do. So you just do whatever you want. You take a photograph and you sell it for 18 grand online, you know, so that would be the life. And then I watched a bunch of wrestling documentaries, and I was just watching one call about the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. I've been talking like this all afternoon. The American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. I'll put the hurt on you with the bionic elbow. I never was a man who is as fat and dumpy looking more successful than Dusty Rhodes. So there is hope for all of us. That is why he's called the American Dream, that you could be that, really look at shape and be athletic. So yeah, that's what I watched. But I'm still talking like the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. Neil, what did you watch?
I'm absolutely stunned that was the only documentary. I was expecting a whole hell of a lot more.
I did watch some stuff online, which I always do to prepare for the podcast, and I watched some Eli Roth interviews. And then I started looking at some of the other stuff he did movie-wise. And then I sent you guys the link to probably what I think is his greatest achievement in cinema, is the Grindhouse trailer for Thanksgiving, the slasher movie, which is actually being made into a real movie as we speak. And I wonder if it'll be anywhere near as good as the trailer, because the trailer is amazing. Yeah.
But you're the same one that also was watching David Lynch. So I'm going to take that with a grain of salt.
I love David Lynch.
I know you like David Lynch. It was Twin Peaks when we were in high school. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because that's always like, Neil, you got to watch Twin Peaks. I have no desire to watch Twin Peaks. I still have not seen Fire Walk With Me.
It's really good.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's fantastic.
It is.
I'm sure it's fantastic. Tell us more about Italian horror films, Eric. It's suspect, my man.
We both
love you. We both love you, but you've made some decisions cinema wise. Mm. I'm going to talk about what I'm watching this week. So I was feeling a little nostalgic. So I was like, I want to watch something a little bit older, something I remember as a kid. So I started thinking about 70s movies, and I don't even remember what year it was made, but I watched The Blues Brothers.
Oh yeah. Yeah. 79 or 80.
Somewhere in there. And then I watched again, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, because that movie makes me laugh ridiculously.
Is that the Nick Cage movie?
Yeah, dude, it is. He's playing himself.
Yeah, I saw the trailer yesterday.
Dude, Pedro Pascal plays his part to perfection. He plays like a geeked out fan who's also supposedly an international drug and arms dealer. And it's amazing. You've got to see it. And he has flashbacks with young Nicolas Cage talking to old Nicolas Cage. It's pretty outstanding. And then because he talks about a movie in there, the Cabinet of Dr. Hard to pronounce, Callisto.
Dr. Caligari,
Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. I did get on Tubi and they have two versions of it. Mm-hmm. So I bookmarked those, but I'm gonna be watching those, next week because I'm headed out to, go visit my parents. I'm catching a flight, but early AM tomorrow morning. So
I've seen The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari a long time ago, and it's one of those super influential silent movies.
Yeah.
That very impressionistic kind of cinematography or whatever. It's really cool.
Well, my parents are old, so there's going to be lots of naps. So while they're down, once I've got their house kind of back in order in the way it needs to be, I was planning on watching that. So we'll see. But that's what I watched this week. Oh, and you know, I watched, this movie was a monumental turd. Freaking awful. Slog through it. My wife and kid were really, really upset. They're like, Dad, why did you even have that movie on? That movie was such a steaming piece of shit. And I'm like, no, what are you talking about? And they're like, Dad, it's like you staked us out in the sun, tied us down with foreskins, poured honey, hot cheese, and garbage on us, let homeless goats lick us. Cabin fever.
I enjoyed this movie.
yeah, me too.
I'd never seen it.
Really?
Never seen it. I'm not a huge Eli Roth fan. He, all of his movies have a severe rapey vibe. I get kind of a rapey vibe off of him. It's just very unsettling. Some of the stuff he does. Unsettling. Who the hell am I? Where did I learn to speak? Unsettling. It's unsettling, boys. I'd never, ever seen it. So it's like, you know, before I got to watch this, I'm going to look up a little bit about it. And I looked up about it. It was like horror comedy. There was one moment that I laughed at and I saw it coming from a mile away. I lived. I made it. And I'm like, that dumbass is going to get himself killed. And then he did. Yeah, Eli Roth, not a fan.
I think that this is probably the easiest movie of his to watch, his being his first movie. I didn't really care for the two Hostel movies that much. I saw the first one and kind of enjoyed it. Part two was just kind of the same shit over again. I never saw The Green Inferno because I know it was just a homage to the Italian cannibal movies of the 70s and 80s, just done in modern times. So I haven't seen that one. And he is like a, I don't want to sound racist, but he's like the Jewish Rob Zombie. And he's like, he has these particular things that he's very into. And Rob Zombie mm-hmm. has these particular things that he's very into. They just do them over and over again in their movies.
I think he would be really good friends with that. Now I can't remember the cat's name. He was the actor that they found all the messages of him. Like, you know, I want to cut pieces of you off.
Oh, Armie Hammer.
Armie Hammer. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a great section on Two Bears, One Cave where they're like, you know, I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt. You know, this all could have been blown up and totally out of proportion. And then they read his text to her like, nope, he's a piece of shit. I think he's got some things to work through. What did they call him in Inglourious Bastards? Because he was in that. Johnny the Bear Jew. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's do the Internet Movie Database tagline before we jump into it.
See, this is the part that's unbelievable because I'm going to read these first three words, and this is where it just loses. It loses its grip on reality. Five college graduates. That right there loses me right there, because after seeing the movie, I'm not believing any of those yayas graduated college. Five college graduates rent a cabin in the woods and begin to fall victim to a horrifying flesh-eating virus, which attracts the unwanted attention of the homicidal locals. Pancakes!
So it's directed by Eli Roth, which we have talked about a little bit already. I added his internet movie or his Wikipedia article, and I was looking at his filmography and seeing Hostel Part 2, love Grindhouse Thanksgiving. He was producer on Last Exorcism, which I have not seen. He directed The Green Inferno, which is a kind of a cannibal movie. He did Knock Knock, which I have not seen. It's the one where Ana de Armas and some other girl torture Keanu Reeves for the entire movie. Have you seen that one?
I've seen the advertisement for it. I've seen the trailer, but I have not watched it.
Yeah,
it's not horrible.
He did it.
It's not?
Not horrible.
No, I've seen it. It's not bad.
Stop. That hurts. Whoa. I don't like that. Whoa. You cut my toe off, bro. That's not cool.
Did Death Wish, the remake with Bruce Willis, which I have not seen. I don't know if Death Wish really needs a remake. The House with the Clock Charles, Walls.
You don't muck with Charles Bronson. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Not even in the same league.
So I heard The House with the Clock in Its Walls is actually a pretty good movie. It was aimed towards kids, but I guess I've heard it's kind of scary. It's got Jack Black. Never saw it.
So we listened to the book, my son and I. Mm-hmm. It was written in the 50s. So the text and the slang and stuff in it and the way he's dressed and his eccentricities are very, very dated. And when the movie came out, we were kind of stoked about that. And it's got like mild elements of horror to it. But, you know, it is definitely a family movie. It's not that scary.
He's working on a Borderlands movie based on the video game. And then he's working on making Thanksgiving, which is the trailer that he made for Grindhouse. One thing I do like that he's done is that he has that documentary called Eli Roth's History of Horror on AMC and on Shudder. It's really good. It's a really good documentary series where they talk to a lot of people in horror movie directors and writers and stuff. They talk about the scary movies. It's not on Shudder anymore. I checked for it today or yesterday. And I think that, you know, it's worth watching. So I give him a little credit for that. And I think he also has a ghost program on Discovery Plus where the people talk about their haunted house experiences or something. So, yeah. So he's kind of all over the place. He did play a kind of like a Girls Gone Wild T-shirt contest MC in Piranha 3D, where his head got smashed in it with by the boat. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
that was actually pretty funny. Yeah, so that's Eli Roth there, and I will stand by my statement that he's like the counterpoint to Rob Zombie. They are your mileage may vary if you like them, like them or not.
Well, he does have a couple things going for him. And since you've brought up the comparison, is that he is not casting Sherry Moon Zombie in every damn thing he makes.
That's true. Yes. Very true.
Hey, you know what? The producers paid for a brand new paper bag. We're going to put it on Sherry and see if she can act her way out of it. Oh, quite. Didn't make it this time. Let's give her one more movie.
I can't believe she tried to be Lily Munster in the freaking Munsters movie he made for Netflix. It was like, she should not be Lily Munster. Not at all.
No.
I sat through 5 minutes of that movie and had to turn it off.
More minutes than I did.
Oh my God. It was so bad.
Yeah. It was totally awful.
It was really, really bad. And I mean, I know that he's a fan of the Munsters. We're digressing here. I know that Rob Zombie is a fan of the Munsters, a big fan. And if you watch his old MTV Cribs from like the, you know, back in when they did that in the early 2000s or whatever, he had a lot of Munsters memorabilia. It's obvious that he's a fan of the show, but just, yeah. Awful.
Did need to be done.
Did not need to be done. So this movie premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival on September 14th of 2002. It wasn't released until a year later because it got bought up at the Toronto International Film Festival. There was a bidding war for this movie because it was made on such a low budget. Lionsgate bought it, and it wound up making $30 million at the box office and a lot of money on home video. So it was turned a big profit for Lionsgate. It was their biggest movie of that year. And the special effects were done by the K&B Effects Studio, which I sent both you guys a highlight reel of their work. They're one of the best.
When they've got a budget, they can crank out some great stuff. But on a $1.5 million budget, you know what they can't do? A dead dog and deer legs.
I like the dead dog. I thought it was pretty funny. The deer legs were cheesy enough to make me laugh. They're kicking through the windshield and stuff.
You know, they were just like those things were, they were way too, you know what? I'm going to body shame the deer. That was a little chunky for a deer. Little chunky, a little hairy. Yeah, just sitting there papping through. That actually got a laugh out loud moment from my wife. Mm-hmm. Having grown up, she grew up in Southern Colorado. So there's been a couple times a deer have popped up onto the hood of their car. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
So cast is Ryder Strong, formerly Woman Meets Girl.
I'm going to interrupt you. Uh-huh. I did not know who this cat was. My wife told me who this guy was. I thought that he cast porn stars because this is the single best porn star name I have ever heard.
Ryder Strong.
I was like, babe, he's got porn stars in this. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, he was from the, was on Disney Channel or one of the, or ABC, the Boy Meets World with Fred Savage's brother and whatever the girl, Danielle Fischel Topanga, that all the guys had a crush on who were like 5 or 6 years younger than us. David, did you have a crush on Danielle Fischel Topanga?
I never saw that show, so I don't know.
I really
don't know who that is. Hmm.
So Jordan Ladd is Karen. She's the daughter of Cheryl Ladd, one of my favorite angels on Charlie's Angels. And I always hoped that Jordan Ladd would have been a bigger star. She was in a bunch of like genre movies, and she was in Club Dread, the Broken Lizard movie. She was the gymnast Penelope or Penelope in that movie. James DeBello plays Bert. Serena Vincent, famously naked the entire movie and not another teen movie, as a foreign exchange student, also gets naked in this movie as Marcy. Joey Kern is Jeff, and Eli Roth plays the stoner dude named Justin, also known as Grimm. And Giuseppe Andrews plays Deputy Winston, man. The party man. You're the party man.
Oh, all right. Popped a picture of Topanga in there for reference for you, David.
Mm-hmm. Let me look at the notes. Oh, yeah. Marcy?
No, that was Marcy. Yeah, that was Serena Vincent. She was in, I think she was originally a Power Ranger, too. Then wound up being naked in Not Another Teen Movie as the foreign exchange student. I think her name was Ariola or something stupid. That movie is dumb. It does have a few funny moments in it. So to me, this movie is like they gave a guy who was a horror movie fan money just to make whatever he wanted. And that's the way this movie feels. It's not really a good movie in any way, but you can tell that he's having a good time, making it. And there's guts and blood and boobs and all the stuff that you want from a cheesy horror movie. And to me, this is kind of a landmark movie in the 2000s, because this is like when the post 9/11 horror movies started coming out. Before, there was the big slasher resurgence in the late 90s, where all you had is like, you know, I Know What You Did Last Summer and what the hell's it, Urban Legends and Valentine and all those type of movies. Where after this movie, this is when things started getting mean, when Saw and, you know, The Final Destination and all those other kind of movies came out, the post 9/11 type of horror movies.
Everyone's nodding. Doesn't work well with audio.
I remember that era of movies, man. Eric, I was a fan. Neil, I'm sorry.
I was looking at the horror movies from the 2000s, which we'll talk about later once we get past the we're talking about this movie, but there is a lot of critical consensus. Some good, some bad. Neil, do you want to
hit us with that? I'll hit you with it. But I tell you what, if someone's going out to a cabin in the woods and they are not reading from the Book of the Dead, then I don't know if I'm just as interested. I needed some demons. That's what I needed.
Well, there's a lot of homages in this movie, and Evil Dead, of course, being one of the biggest homages, Texas Chainsaw being another, where there's shots directly lifted out of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre into this movie. There's a little bit of Last House on the Left. There's kind of a lot of those 70s style horror movies. And you can tell that Eli Roth is a huge fan. And if you hear any interview with him about his roots in horror movies, that's exactly what he loves to talk about, is that type of horror movie.
Deep breath. Stretched out a little bit. All right. Let's go. UpRocks reported that Cabin Fever drew better than average reviews. The performances from the leads were complimented by critics as solid and adequate. Adequate. Now, let's just put that in context. Let's just say that you have had a sexual encounter with someone for the first time. And you said, how was it? And they said, it was adequate. So that tells you right there where that what that word does right there was adequate. Their roles, however, were met with negative reactions. IGN and the Los Angeles Times' Manola Dargis described them respectively as stereotypical and monumentally irritating, which, of course, was the point. Furthermore, IGN and Dargis criticized the film's lack of scares, delivering more jokes and gore. Stephen Holden of the New York Times and Peter Travers of Rolling Stone disagreed. Holden said Cabin Fever finds an unusually potent blend of dread, gore, and gallows humor. And Travers called it a blast of good gory fun that just won't quit. Kim Newman in Empire and Maitland McDonough in TV Guide awarded Cabin Fever 3 stars out of 5. It was also noted that both people had nothing much to do that week. Reviewers observed the film's homage to low-budget horror and thriller films, including Night of the Living Dead, Deliverance, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Evil Dead and its sequel, and The Blair Witch Project. IGN said Cabin Fever struggles valiantly to be both a worthy addition and simultaneous homage to these genres, becoming instead a passably enjoyable slab of schlock, criticizing its failure to reinvent the films that inspired Roth's. Conversely, Newman said, there's a fine line between homage and simply stealing, but writer-director Eli Roth mostly manages the former. Stephen Hunter in the Washington Post said Cabin Fever compared poorly to The Evil Dead and The Blair Witch Project, describing it as a loud, derivative, grade Z horror film of no particular distinction. McDonough said Cabin Fever was more Straw Dogs than Night of the Living Dead, citing its theme of degeneration of relationships under pressure. Some critics said Cabin Fever suffered from genre and tone inconsistencies, with Roger Ebert in the Chicago Sun-Times comparing the flaw to kids on those arcade games where the target lights up and you have to stomp on it. Holy shit, that was good. Ebert was critical that the film alternates between horror and weird humor, getting nowhere. He said, could develop its own plague story in a serious way like George Romero picture or 28 Days Later. Owen Gleiberman in Entertainment Weekly said, Cabin Fever is what 28 Days Later would have looked like had it been made without style, subtlety, grunge of night video photography, or fashionable apocalyptic pretensions. I like this guy. Ebert gave Cabin Fever 1.5 stars out of 4, and Gleiberman said it was a big, dumb, crude, noisy, goose the audience bash and proud of it. Rotten Tomatoes gave the film a score of 62% based on 140 reviews with an average rating of 5.92 of 10. The website's consensus reads, more gory than scary, Cabin Fever is satisfied with paying homage to genre conventions rather than reinventing them. On Metacritic, the film earned mixed or average reviews with a weighted average of 56 out of 100 based on 31 reviews. Peter Jackson, the director of Lord of the Rings film series. See, I find it stupid that they have to say Peter Jackson, director of the Lord of the Rings series. Like, what rock have you been living under? Peter Jackson, the guy that works at 7-Eleven. No. Was a notable fan of Cabin Fever, having seen the film from a print sent to him. Jackson suspended production on The Return of the King twice in his native New Zealand to have it screened to his cast and crew members. He complimented the film as unrelenting, gruesomely funny bloodbath. Quentin Tarantino also expresses admiration for Cabin Fever, calling Roth the future of horror.
And obviously, Quentin Tarantino likes Eli Roth because he's in a couple of his movies. The thing that I do agree in a sense that he read the pulse of what was going on, and movies kind of veered into that ugly territory where everybody's an asshole, especially in the Final Destination movies and in Saw, and you want to see them get their just desserts. Just like in Hostel, they're ugly Americans in a different country pissing people off, and now they're going to pay the price. So that kind of tended to be the way the movies moved for a good half a decade before things changed a little bit. So I feel like it pointed where horror was going to go, for good or bad.
Everyone's just sort of sitting. Dave is not really saying anything. I have nothing to say.
Well, I'm trying to look something up here. I want to say I first saw this movie, it was all based on, I saw it in the movie theater, and it was, the only reason I saw it was because Quentin Tarantino had hyped Eli Roth up so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it. And watching it this weekend brought back a lot of memories. It's not a great film, but it's enjoyable, and it made me laugh.
Well, we had just moved to Colorado Springs when this movie had come out, so I didn't see it in the theater, but I waited for it on video, and I bought the video without even seeing it. I bought the DVD, and I really enjoyed it, and I watched the shit out of it. I probably annoyed Jamie a lot with it because I really liked it at the time that I saw it, but then I stopped. I'm like, eh, whatever. Then I hadn't watched it in a good 10 years or more, and I felt like what you did. When I saw it again, it made me laugh, and I felt a little bit nostalgic, but it didn't make me realize how really trite it is. It's not really important or anything. It's just kind of a dumb exercise in grossing people out. And I guess if you're in the mood for it, that it exceeds in that sense.
Yeah. I was just waiting for people to die so the damn thing would get over. I was waiting for it to pick. I was waiting for it to pick up. I would pause it and I'd look at it. I'm like, 58 minutes. Jack shit's happened. Oh my God. Okay, one mildly funny scene where the idiots are bashing their own car and waving around, back, get away from me, bro, get away from me, and then light him on fire inexplicably. And that guy, I don't know what it is about flesh-eating viruses or like homeless people are made out of wicker, but that dude went up like a match before he ran off into the forest.
Well, didn't the girl spray him with something like
maybe
hairspray or something like that? And then
yeah, I think it was hairspray.
Hairspray, and like they're trying to get him away from him, and then Paul, Ryder Strong's character, had the torch and then set him on fire and went running into the woods. And did you hear, this is my synopsis of the characters. It says Karen the cute girl, least asshole-ish of a person, Paul, who's the quote unquote nice guy, Marcy's the hot girl, Bert is the guy from Farmington. I felt that would resonate with Neil and Jason
and David, yes.
Neil and David.
Farmington, Mexico. Sure. Farmington. I'm going to go out and shoot some squirrels.
Why?
Bro, I didn't mean to shoot you. I actually have been in the room with people that were shot accidentally, and that was said, bro, I didn't mean to shoot you.
Like, That's Farmington. Really dumb, jockey kind of guy. You know, I was like, why are you going to shoot the squirrels? Because you're gay. that made me laugh. And I'm like, everybody knows a jerky kind of guy like that. If you're friends with a bunch of guys, everybody knows a dude who is like that. It's just an asshole to be an asshole. And people are like, oh, he's all right. He's, you know, but then when you're around him, you're like, God, why are we hanging out with this asshole?
What's this guy's problem? That's almost as annoying as sitting next to Dennis.
Yes, Dennis is the kid who with the mullet, who's the grandson of the shop owner who bites Paul. And then we kind of get the racist vibes with this terrible joke that they set up with the N-word at the beginning, and then they paid off stupidly at the end. But yeah, they're in a small town. They think they're better than everybody else. They look down on everybody. And that sets up the tension between that happens later. So they kind of, and of course, Bert tries to steal something on the way out and threatens to burn down the shop and all this kind of stuff like that. So they're just assholes.
But see, this maybe is where Snickers got that gold mine of an advertising campaign. Maybe if he'd have gotten that Snickers, he wouldn't have been such an asshole.
Yes. He was hangry. They get to the cabin. There's sex and stupidity going on. Marcy gives Jeff the old prostate, action action there.
That was by far the most entertaining part of the movie, and I didn't even see it. I got up off the couch. I had to go do something. And my son's in the other room playing video games, and my wife's like, all right, they're fucking. There's some fucking. Thank God the boy is not here. Okay, she just turned him around, and now she's fucking him. And just her play-by-play was probably the more entertaining part of this.
And then, of course, we get Paul and Karen. And Paul is in the friend zone. Karen's teasing him. And just, you know, we're kind of getting to know the people. None of them are very, you know, likable. Even Karen, who's, you know, cute, but she's still kind of, she's not that likable either, because everybody you want to see die, And eventually it happens. I did like the scary story time when they were telling, you know, the story about the bowling alley massacre, which kind of cracked me up. And Eli Roth's brother was the bald guy who was handing out the bowling shoes and stuff like that, who was still smiling as his head was in the ball return. That made me laugh.
You said ball return.
David, what did you feel watching it again? Did you enjoy it more this time, or enjoy it as much? Or
I think it was the same. I mean, it's been so long since I watched it that there were some parts that I completely forgot that were just, yeah, Dennis doing the karate stuff just for no reason. How I forgot about the cop, how bad the party cop was, but I did
forget about him totally, and I probably repressed it because he drags down the movie, but he's still kind of funny too, because everybody knows that kind of guy. Like, man, we're gonna have an awesome party, man,
and they know you got 5 pounds of hanging meat. How uncomfortable how uncomfortable would that be?
Yeah, so just the everybody's unlikable. The part that really grossed me out is when, you know, after the guy gets burnt, he's laying in the water supply and stuff, and Paul gives Karen that water, and there's just a chunk of infected meat in the water that she drinks. Yeah. It always grossed me out in the movie. So, ugh. And eventually she gets sick, and then you get, of course, the most famous part of the movie, where he lets his fingers do the walking, and she finds out that Karen is sick. And they ostracize her to the shed and stuff like that. So nobody knows how to handle a crisis in this movie, which I guess is basically the point of the movie, is that everybody, you know, turns on each other.
5 college graduates.
maybe it was San Juan College.
5 college graduates.
Hey, I graduated from San Juan College.
Yeah. That part was really gross.
Eric disparaging the junior college system right there. Holy crap.
I went to junior college and I went to so many junior colleges. I've had like, you know, credit hours in like three different junior colleges. San Juan College, Albuquerque TVI, Pikes Peak Community College. Taking classes everywhere. Just don't have a degree. The School of Hard Knocks.
I live a block away. I live a block away from a community college, and I signed up to take some language courses. And the guy was like, you know what? With just a few more hours here, man, you could really, you know, do a lot for your career, and you get yourself an associate's degree. And it's like, I have two master's degrees and I have a solid career that's pensioned. Yeah, but you don't have an associate's degree, man.
We're veering off, but I think I realized I didn't want to continue to go to college because I make, you know, pretty good money. But I would go and like take these English courses and stuff like that. And then the people are like, hey, is there a way you could buy us beer after a class? Cause you're going there with like, you know, 18, 19 years old and you feel like a total failure. And you decide that, you know, maybe just working where I work is good enough with, you know, a defined benefit pension where I can retire in 5 years. David, what is your community college experience like being a community college graduate?
Well, I went to college for 6 years, and I would say most of that was spent at the community college, 1 year at the university.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun. Smoked a lot of weed. Didn't take class too serious. And which, you know, looking back at it, I wish I would have maybe paid attention to my counselors when they said, you got to take this class. And I said, nah, I'm going to take human figure drawing again, plus another semester of lap swimming. I fucked off a lot, but it was fun.
This reminds me of one of the greatest lines in any film is in Better Off Dead, where Curtis Armstrong plays John Cusack's friend in high school. He's like, I've been at this high school for 7.5 years. I'm no dummy. It's one of the greatest lines of any movie.
Thank you. I was actually thinking of that, but I couldn't recall where that was from. So I'm glad that you said it. It's like, damn, there's what was the movie?
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff. We're going back to the movie of Cabin Fever here. There's a lot of stuff that's kind of like pending, like the creepy guy who goes to sit in the fire. And that's Eli Roth playing Grim and his dog, Dr. Mambo, who shows back up and is threatening everybody.
Faced.
See, there are parts that are funny in this movie.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. The thing that I found a little bit amusing was when he finds the dead body floating in the reservoir.
Mm-hmm.
And the reservoir looks like shit, not someplace you'd want to drink water out of. They got like old rust and equipment and garbage floating around in there. Is when he has every kid, and this is why five college graduates, every 11-year-old in the world would like, you know what? I'm going to climb down that ladder. I'm going to poke it with a stick.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm going to do. And then you're just sitting there the whole time, like, I'm just waiting for that thing to break. He's going to go face down on that dead body, face down on it. Boom, face down. There he goes.
I did enjoy the amount of blood being vomited and coughed up on everything. You know, from the bum to Karen when they try to take her to get her in the car, you know, because they get the car going again and she's puking blood all over the place and everywhere. And Bert, our guy from Farmington, who is, you know, secretly sick and he's coughing up blood and stuff. And Jeff is being the, you know, entitled guy. He's got the handkerchief over his face. So there are things that are memorable in the movie, and the way the poor Karen dies in the shed alone with her face getting eaten off by the dog, and then Marcy getting killed by Dr. Mambo and her foot is just laying in the yard and stuff.
Okay. I'm just going to go, and it might be an unpopular opinion. Dr. Mambo's a dick.
Yes, he is. He's not a good dog.
How hungry is Dr. Mambo? And he didn't look like a big dog, maybe 70 pounds. So he's basically like munched out all of her intestines and then eaten the whole other girl and just left her foot.
Mm-hmm.
And the time. Okay. I've owned dogs. Dave owned dogs. The time it would have taken that damn dog to eat her and to gnaw through the bone to leave the foot like that. Nonsense. Eli, you dropped the ball.
Well, what I just really feel like,
go ahead, David.
Well, what I like about this movie is it's, if I was given $1 million to make a horror film, this is what I would do. Because this is the type of cheesy shit that we talked about back in the day, Eric. I don't even remember like some of the fun horror films that we've watched. I could see us somehow through the success of this podcast and our listeners hearing this wanting to give us $1 million to make a movie. And I could see us coming up with something like this. Just blood being spewed everywhere and just disgusting and stupid.
Well, just right before this, we were talking about the idea that we have for a slasher, slasher series.
That's right.
Yeah, our idea is that, you know, we talked about it last week where Jason stumbles on a camp of CrossFitters and he has to get in shape to kill them. Well, I was just thinking that if you couldn't get the rights to Jason, it's still a good story to have a guy who's like really into CrossFit, or his girlfriend's into CrossFit, right? And he's not that into it yet. And his girlfriend takes him to like a CrossFit gym, and then she dies tragically doing those dumbass pull-ups that they do, and she lands on her neck. And then he comes back and, you know, he tries to kill all the people at the CrossFit gym or at the CrossFit camp. And there would be a lot of like ironic punishments, like making somebody choose to eat carbs or kill themselves, things like that. That would be fun. And if somebody gave us $1 million, I'm sure we could probably swing something.
Yeah.
So New Line or Lionsgate or anybody, if you're listening.
Yeah, we've got a great idea.
We just got to line up the boobs somehow.
Oh yeah, exactly. That would be an homage to like Death Spa or some of those other, you know, aerobic themed horror movies of the 80s.
See, here's where I know there would be an issue is that David would really like, okay, here's all the messed up stuff we're going to do. Here's all this. And then Eric's just going to be in there and like, and she's topless, but she's wearing 80s aerobic outfits.
Exactly.
This movie is supposed to be set in 2026. But she's bringing back aerobic outfits with no tops from the 80s.
Just like Ninja 3, The Domination, where it was set in that cheesy gym that was full of carpet and stuff. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Looks super clean.
Like the video for Olivia Newton-John's physical.
All right. So Dave and I will log off. We'll give you a second and then we'll come back and we'll finish the podcast.
So the movie is just a excuse to kill hateful people, and it's pretty funny. I do like when the Bert gets a car running. He goes back to town. Dennis bites him, and Dennis senses that something's wrong when biting him, and his dad is upset. So a pack of rednecks come to the camp and try to kill. Everybody's there at the cabin. And you get the direct homage to Dawn of the Dead with the screwdriver to the ear. It's yeah. a nice blood squib work with people getting shot.
At least, you know, he stuck with all of the like weird redneck locals. You know, you had the one big simple one just kind of stumbling around with his box.
Well, and that's again the difference between the Eli Roth. Like if it was Eli Roth and Rob Zombie, if it was a Rob Zombie movie, the protagonist would be the hillbillies to go hunt down the snotty kids from the college. Versus the outsider kids from the college coming into redneck country. Kind of like how House of a Thousand Corpses was punishing the kids who happened to go to the sideshow thing at the chicken place.
Just don't upset Captain Spaulding.
Yes, Dr. Satan, Captain Spaulding. So that also came out about around the same time. What time did House of a Thousand Corpses come out? So that came out in 2003. So this is that time where the kind of a mean streak in horror was happening. Because that definitely is a mean streak movie if you watch a House of a Thousand Corpses, which I actually think is better than The Devil's Rejects. So that's probably one of the only Rob Zombie movies that I find halfway enjoyable. Do not like the Halloween remakes.
No.
Obviously, we talked about his terrible Munsters. I've never seen the one, The Lords of Salem.
Avoid.
Yeah. And
Avoid.
I did The Devil's Rejects. I didn't see Three from Hell because I knew it was just going to be the same with the Firefly family and stuff like that, and just more Sherry Moon Zombie. So, and of course, there's more sex scene. Paul and Marcy have sex. Marcy is sick, and Paul's pouring Listerine all over his junk, which I thought was kind of funny.
Did she say something like, "We could just die," or something? And she looks at him and says, "But lastly, or before you die, you just want to fuck the shit out of the person next to you," or something like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Makes me wonder, like, afterwards, how bad her breath was that he decided to pour Listerine on his junk. Thank you. Thank you.
I probably would have done this at not pouring Listerine, but if the world, like, if we know we're going to die from some flesh-eating bacteria, and some hot girl says that to me, I'm like, let's do it. I don't know. Fuck it. Might as well go out in style, right?
Well, after that, it leads to the second most talked about scene is when she's shaving her legs. But, you know, what are you going to do when you're scared and know you're going to die? I'm just going to shave my legs in the bathtub. But it was good for a nice gross out scene.
Yeah, and even if it hurts really bad, I'm just going to keep running that razor up the giant, like, open seeping pock marks on my leg.
Well, Eli Roth tells a story about how he was raised, went during a summer, he went to raise horses in Iceland with a bunch of other people his age, where he got a bacterial infection where he was shaving and then some of the skin came off. So that was, they took him to the hospital and then they realized that he had this infection and was in the hospital for a little bit. So I guess that was sort of based on a true story, but taken to an extreme.
So this leads me to what, something Dave and I both take to heart. Just don't shave. Mm. Don't worry about it. You're all good. You're screwed, however.
I know. I got to keep it nice. That's the way my lady likes it. Anyway.
Oh, you mean David's sister.
Yeah.
That's who David's sister. That's who you're talking about. This is the first time he's been grossed out, even watching the movie. Like,
well, it made me laugh, David, is that you were grossed out by the stuff in Friday the 13th part, I mean, where Jason goes to hell, you said you had to turn away. But this movie is way grosser, I think.
It was different, though. I think I was eating at the time. So I was eating in Friday the 13th, and all that gross shit was happening. I was like, oh, let me just... It's not like I was completely turning away, but I had to kind of look down for a minute while I was like, okay, I'm not going to watch this while I finish my pizza or whatever the fuck I was eating. But, yeah.
Like, after gross. Paul bashes poor Karen's face in with the shovel.
12, 13 times.
13 times, yeah. It goes from like, oh, he's doing a mercy killing to like, oh, he's really going overboard.
Yeah, he's taking out some frustrations. That's what he was doing.
Exactly. Where, yeah, it was the way they shot that was kind of funny where he's like, oh, well, he cares about her. He's just putting her out of her misery. Like, nope.
And he gets looking like Fire Marshal Bill looking for a guy. Give us a kiss.
Then he finds a Grim in this cave. He's all split in half. Then the aforementioned, he hits a deer when he finds a truck, the deer hoofs and stuff. And he shoots the deer and there's blood all over him.
That's where half their blood budget went right there. That was a big old, like in narrow and thick stream of blood that just decides to splatter him. And what kind of load was he using in that shotgun? He blasted the living crap out of that deer. That thing went flying.
And he shows up to the hospital, or actually shows up to a party where Deputy Winston is partying with some underage people because he went to go check out an underage party. And he forgot to send the tow truck and he gets attacked. He attacks Deputy Winston and goes to the hospital and winds up being pretty much just sabotaged by the local police, and Winston dumps his body into the water supply for the town.
Well, the water supply, if you go like dip buckets of water out of a random ass creek to make lemonade.
Yeah. There was a nice homage to Night of Living Dead where they pile up all the other bodies and set them on fire.
Should have piled those kids on there for taking freaking creek water. God knows what. It's like mutant Giardia taking them.
Exactly. You wouldn't even have to have flesh-eating virus in the creek water. You would get diarrhea anyway from all
the whole town just shit itself to death.
So, David, I do agree with your assessment. It is like you just gave a guy who loves horror movies $1.5 million to make a horror movie. And he just went all out just trying to put all the shit that he likes into the movie. I don't think he was trying to make a deeper statement on anything or commentary. He was just making idiots die.
Yep. That's what I would do. If you gave me $1 million right now, I would probably never get a chance to make another movie. So I would just go all out.
We could do like some like infected green chili. We could get like a sponsorship. That would be good.
What do you think? You're all sick. Everybody's all sick from eating this green chili, yo.
Huh? And you have to go, huh? Or what? And then what? Eat some of that green chili or what?
I did. It was all good.
save it for the people. I did put in a link to the Rotten Tomatoes guide to the best horror movies of the 2000s. And this excludes a lot of horror movies because it's based on Rotten Tomatoes score. So some memorable movies are not listed in there. Let the Right One In from 2008 is the number one horror movie from the 2000s, which it deserves. It's freaking good. Have you seen that one, Neil or David?
No.
No, I haven't, but the poster's intriguing as hell.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a vampire story, but different than most. They did an American remake with the Chloe Moretz or whatever, probably about 10 years ago, but it's not near as good as the original one.
I don't remember this one at all.
Yeah, Swedish movie. It's really good. Pan's Labyrinth is number two, and that's really good.
I got bad memories about that movie. Horrible movies. Horrible memories about that film.
The only part that I remember being really, really disturbing is that guy getting his face smashed in with a bottle. Oh, my God. Terrible. The Host is really, really good. Came out in 2006. It's a Korean giant monster movie. It's definitely good.
Yeah, I like that one. That one was good. I did see that.
The Devil's Backbone, that's another Guillermo del Toro movie, really good. Drag Me to Hell is number five. That's actually really good. I enjoyed that one.
Is it good?
Yeah. There's a lot of good it's PG-13, but I think it's R. But it's Sam Raimi movie. It's got a lot of good funny, weird, gross Evil Dead 2-like stuff in it. It's pretty good. Shaun of the Dead, of course, that's classic. Ginger Snaps, only ever saw it once, came out in 2000. It's okay. Wreck is really good. That the Spanish horror movie, Zombieland, that's good. 28 Days Later, also awesome. The Orphanage looks freaky. I've never seen it. Dracula, Pages from a Virgin Diary, never saw that one. The Descent is actually really good, mm-hmm. where they go spelunking and all the monsters are all the monsters are down there. That's one of those movies that turns like halfway. You think it's one thing and it turns into a completely different movie. Slither, James Gunn's movie, that's pretty good. The House of the Devil, that came out in 2009. That's a real slow burn horror movie. Have either of you guys seen it?
Yeah, and it is very, very slow. Not Eli Roth slow. 4 hours into it, nothing's happened.
But it's directed by T.I. West, who's now having a big heyday with the X movie and what's the other, the sequel where with Mia Goth, it's getting a lot of buzz.
Yeah.
Pontypool. I've heard that's really good. It's kind of like a low budget zombie movie that happens during like in a radio studio. I haven't seen it. I've heard a lot about it, but I haven't seen it yet. Paranormal Activity. That was pretty good. If you like found footage movies.
What else? Shadow of the Vampire.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
That was entertaining.
Yeah.
I've heard Martyrs is crazy. I've never seen it. It's actually on, you can watch it on Tubi. It's a French horror movie that is supposed to be super, super hard to watch. I have not seen it. The Dawn of the Dead remake, that was pretty good. Not as good as the original at all, but that's definitely, it introduced Zack Snyder and James Gunn.
Mm-hmm. Bubba Hotep.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Bubba Hotep.
Frailty was really good. That one was with Bill Paxton, directed by Bill Paxton. That was a good one.
Yep. Man, this is an interesting list. There are a lot of foreign films on this.
Yeah. Planet Terror. Speaking of Eli Roth, he's in Planet Terror. He's in Death Proof. So
yeah, this is a good list. This is bringing back a lot of memories here.
28 Weeks Later. I actually like 28 Weeks Later better than 28 Days Later because I didn't like the way it's shot on video. The first one, you know, it just looks super, super grainy, where 28 Weeks Later is a little more compelling to me.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Black Sheep is pretty funny with the killer sheep. The Mist came out in 2007. That was awesome. The Ring in 2002. That was really good as well. Probably one of the best American remakes of a Japanese horror movie.
Yeah, that was a good movie. Yep.
Snakes on a Plane. The Manson Family. I never saw that one in 2003. Might be interesting.
Red Dragon. That's something I forgot was I did watch the... Oh, no, I didn't watch Red Dragon. Yeah, I did watch Red Dragon the other night.
Mm-hmm.
The 2002?
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah. Oh, look at that. American Psycho. Identity. That was a good one.
Cabin Fever's all the way down at number 78.
Did you guys talk about Fido?
No, I've never seen that one. It looks pretty funny, but I've never saw it where they keep zombies as pets.
Yeah, it is pretty funny. I would definitely watch that one if you get a chance.
The My Bloody Valentine remake actually gets pretty good ratings. And that's one thing that happened in the 2000s is the remakes started to happen where the Friday the 13th and Texas Chainsaw, My Bloody Valentine, the Night of the Demons, they all had remakes in the year 2000. So that's when that remake wave hit everybody. Some good, some bad. In fact, we're going to do remake month in June and talk about all the remakes. It's also listed on the Internet Movie Database of movies from the horror movies from the 2000s. Really not that bad of a year. Of a decade for horror movies. Final Destination series came out, which we need to do some of those. They're super funny. Part two and three being the two best, I think.
You see, you watch a movie like that and you don't really think anything of it until, you know, you're behind like, I don't know, a lumber truck or a log.
Exactly.
And then you're sitting back there and you're like, you know what? I'm going to just ease on over into this other lane real quick.
That's what Final Destination 2 did for everybody who drives behind lumber trucks. Like, I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to be a little cautious on this one. Jeepers Creepers. I remember seeing that one.
No.
Resident Evil series started. House of a Thousand Corpses, Wrong Turn, which I haven't seen and since it first came out. I kind of enjoyed it. It's one of those, you know, mutated rednecks type movies, kind of like what's the one in the desert that Wes Craven did? The Hills Have Eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. High Tension, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Dawn of the Dead, Saw, House of Wax, which I've talked about a couple times. Not bad. Pretty good for a remake.
Yeah.
Land of the Dead, The Devil's Rejects, Saw 2, Saw, Hostel. So overall, I think the, you know, 2000-2010, pretty decent. Dead Silence was pretty good. Yeah, not that bad. The Mist was definitely good. I would say overall, 2000-2010 was better than probably 90-99 horror movie wise. That's just me.
Welcome, it's pretty good. Welcome to Nostalgia Time with Eric.
I just think it's kind of cool to put it into context to how, you know, we've done a shitload of 80s horror movies and, you know, a decent amount of 90s, but how much it's changed since we're getting closer to where we are now, how horror movies, you know, went through that quote unquote torture porn phase. That was the buzzword for horror movies at that time.
So what was that movie? That Nick Cage flick was like 8mm.
Yeah. 8mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of torture porn.
Mm-hmm. He's trying to hunt down the makers of snuff movies and stuff. And Seven came out in the 90s, I think. Because I really remember thinking being that was one of the really, really disturbing movies.
1995.
Wow. So that movie was ahead of its time. Still holds up well, too. It's a good movie.
Did you buy that one on DVD?
Of course.
When you took it up to the
counter? I don't have it on Blu-ray, though.
when you took it up to the counter, did you go, "What's in the box?"
What's in the box? So next week we are going to do a go back to the 80s for a probably an underseen gem of a sci-fi movie called Enemy Mine with Louis Gossett Jr. and Dennis Quaid. David, have you ever seen it?
No.
Actually pretty good.
It's actually pretty good. Some of the outer space effects are a little reminiscent of like 1930s Buckaroo Banzai Flash Gordon serials.
What's it called?
Enemy Mine. You know what I'm talking about, Eric, where they got the rockets and then they just make these like awkward turns and like start heading back the other direction.
Yeah, it's time that we haven't done a sci-fi movie in a while. So, and this one is, I remember it being really good and being on HBO all the time. Finally said it. I haven't mentioned HBO until 1 hour and 1 minute into the
park.
Right to the very end. I got to squeeze that in there. So, yeah, join us for that next week. And once again, thank you everybody for listening. RVSpodcast222@gmail.com. Check us out on Twitter and on Instagram.
No, you can reach me at cabinfeversucks.net.
I enjoyed it.
Me too.
Yeah.
It was no Black Christmas. It was no Black Christmas. I will give it that. I would watch this. You know what? I would watch this again if both of you guys were in the room.
Yeah.
I think that would have made this way more entertaining.
That's probably true. Cool. And then in 2 weeks, we're going to do Jason 10. Or Jason X with the guys from the Dave and Doc podcast. So look forward to that one. That'll be a lot of fun. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Wait, they're from the South, so we'd have to be like, y'all. Have a good week.
Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Retro Video Store Podcast.